to Bonus Banter, where we answer your questions and talk about nothing.
And welcome back to Bonus Banter. This is our, I think, 14th Bonus Banter we've ever done. Pretty good. We're getting good at these.
That makes us 2 weeks old.
It's 2 weeks old. I think it's almost coming up on a year that we've started doing Bonus Banter.
Hey, yeah.
So for this one, I thought we could start a fun series because I was feeling creative. This started, I think, when I was sick and preparing for the Rime of the Frostmaiden game that we're running now. Having to run D&D 5th edition kind of made me understand again why people like homebrew so much. It's because there's basically fuck all in the actual game system sometimes, and you have to make it up. Case in point, I'm running in Forgotten Realms, which is like the main setting, and in 5th edition, there's basically fuck all there for you for information. So you basically have to get everything you need from the adventure module itself, and it really doesn't have as much as you need. It has enough for its own content, but if you want to make a character that's from that world and feels real and like traveled in it or whatever, you're just up shit creek. And then there's Greyhawk. Poor Greyhawk. Like nothing for 5e.
Yeah. Rip Greyhawk.
And not only that, a lot of stuff that is using Greyhawk like places and names is being pretend that it's set in Forgotten Realms or mistaken that it's set there. Mm-hmm. It's sad. It makes me sad. But it made me realize why people want to make their own worlds, because it's just the content isn't like what you get in Pathfinder, right? Galarian comes in 2nd edition in the core rulebook, or I think in player core now, definitely in GM core. Like it comes with the game when you're going to run it. And in 1st edition, you could basically pick where you wanted your trope of a game to be, and there would be several books on just that area alone to run a game in, and had everything you needed to get started. And 2nd edition, they're doing that, but it's taking a while to catch up with the volume of places covered in 1E, and they're focusing on different parts of the world that weren't explored in 1E. So if you want to do the 1E things, you can do it, but you're going to have to rely on older source material to make your game come alive, because they're trying to flesh out the whole planet. You know?
And they're releasing a lot. It's less small books, and they're more combined into big books as well.
Like regions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I like. But in the vein of having to come up with homebrew things to make Rime of the Frostmaiden work and doing all this stuff, and having to be creative, it made me see like, oh, I get it. You know, homebrewing is a fun thing to do by itself. I think the risk for mechanical stuff is making things that are unbalanced and all that. But in terms of settings and places and cultures and worlds of blah, 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 creation myth, that doesn't really necessarily affect mechanics all the time. It can, and I think that's a whole other discussion we can have today about how it should. But, you know, it can be more just the set dressing for your D&D thing, right? So I thought it would be fun to challenge ourselves on the Third Gallon podcast to be creative, to embrace the part of tabletop role-playing games that really haven't done much in recent years, which is homebrewing. Fade into black.
I meant homebrewing.
Anyway. We haven't had a bunch of raunchy sex scenes on the podcast, thankfully.
We haven't had a bunch of raunchy sex scenes, just graphic with the noises.
Thank God.
But I think it'd be fun to do...
just sub in the turtle video noises.
all I can imagine is...
oh, Chester noises.
No.
I thought it would be fun to do a creative writing exercise for homebrew worlds. Drow seemed excited about this. Jacob less so, decidedly.
What is wrong with you?
Likes basically...
I have a solid reason why. It's just very difficult because... Derek, it's very funny. Derek explained his process for this, and every bit along the way I was like, that sounds horrible. Sounds horrible. I make up stuff when I have to.
Yeah.
I don't do it for fun.
Why did you run a homebrew setting?
Because it was a lot easier than trying to learn 0.5
and most
setting.
Of his homebrew is horribly fair. Plagiarized. Then, let's be real.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't, but that's okay. That's fine. That's easy peasy. That's what you're supposed to do with homebrew.
Yeah.
You take ideas from elsewhere and change them. It's same thing anywhere else works. It's like whenever I build for Hawthorne, I'm not doing it. It's fun, but I don't do it for fun. I build what I need to make what I think is a fun adventure. So I don't make the village by the forest because I'm like, oh, I want to have a little village there. It's going to be neat. I'm like, there has to be a village there. There has to be a reason for people to be there, or else the party wouldn't have stuff to go off of and stuff like that. Whereas Derek, you just really enjoy making up stuff.
I do.
Yeah.
But like, that's the thing. So I wanted this to be kind of a creative writing challenge, or getting us to be creative and think homebrew, embracing the part of the game that we, again, haven't really done much with. Not all of us have to do it the same way, and not everyone has to participate. I don't mind going more if we have to. I just want to have more like, be creative, do a homebrew thing. And more importantly, I want us, basically the format of this, we've been thinking about calling it Homebrew Hot Seat. Don't know if that's going to stick or not, but basically come with a homebrew idea, with a pitch, with a concept, tell the group, and then as you like explain it and flesh it out, think of some more things to flesh out creatively. This element, I got inspired when we were doing our catching up for book two of Outlaws of Alkenstar. We all kind of creatively came up with different ways to rearrange or do different things with the structure of the story to make it more interesting. Mm. So I think it would be fun for us to kind of collectively work on one of our homebrew ideas. Like, obviously, if you're in the hot seat, if you have the core idea, you're kind of the GM at this moment, right? The arbiter of, I don't know if I want that to go that way. But we can work together to flesh out. Maybe it could be like a city, a culture, a character in this place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, just because we're homebrewing this doesn't mean we have to play it. And even if we did play it, it doesn't mean it has to be like Pathfinder or D&D. Because a lot of games assume things about your world in terms of what's in it and like tropes and stuff like that. And my favorite kind of games are the ones that are super tightly bound to their game world, like The Witcher. It is trying to be, the Witcher RPG is trying to be The Witcher, and it doesn't work. You could do it generically, but it would be so much work to do that, right? It wants to represent that kind of story, that kind of universe. Or Forbidden Lands, it wants to represent some survival elements, traveling, exploring, right? The finer details and mechanics are not as important because you're rolling dice pool stuff, so you're looking for successes, versus Pathfinder and D&D, like, both assume like certain fantasy races and tropes. They both assume a certain magic system, right? I like that we don't have to think of worlds that will fit the Pathfinder or D&D mold, but we can just be creative, and we don't have to use this at all. If we want to do something with it later, we certainly could, but like, focus is more on create a cool place that it could be a TTRPG, it could be a book, it could be a video game, what have you, right? Mm. So I'm going to kick things off with this because we're still trying to figure out the format of this. I'm going to talk about a world that I'm trying to think up, and I'll tell my process because that can also change. Like Jacob said, his process is more functional and very much plagiarize first and, you know, think of how you want to change things, right?
Don't like how you phrased it, but you're 100% correct.
I'm 100% correct. Every one of your adventures was, that's a cool idea. I'm going to beat it into what I want it to be.
There was a hard, hard point when that started to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I don't know, it was when you went to the vault.
Yep.
It was from that point on, a vast majority of the adventures were based off something. I will say, before that, they were more or less just, what happens next?
Yeah,
not based off of anything rather than things needed to happen. But then everything I wanted to happened. And I was like, well, now I need some ideas.
Yeah. And that's fine. Like, if you're a new GM, this could also be helpful for a new GMs trying to think of homebrew things. Like, if you like a quest from a video game, a plot line from a movie, it's okay to steal it.
Yeah.
You're not selling this. Plagiarize
really
the hell out
of
it.
Absolutely. There's not very many creative ideas out there. They're all just recreations of something else.
Don't be afraid to be the people who made POW World. If you think, man, I wish this adventure was something like Pokemon and Legend of Zelda and Ark mixed together, just do it.
Exactly.
You can have a lot ball. Of fun.
Take what you want. Give nothing back.
Oh my God, you quoting Pirates of the Caribbean
I
at me?
I am.
But
more
my,
plagiarism.
Yeah!
My process for this, and I was kind of going hard mode because it's me and I just like to suffer. My process for this was, there's a certain genre of fantasy I wanted to do a homebrew setting in. And I don't want to tell it to you guys yet. I'm going to tell it to you. But I want to see if you can guess whenever after I give the backstory to this. There's a certain genre of fantasy I wanted to do. And I wanted to also, my goal with this was to make a fantasy setting. It has some magic in it. It has some fantasy races you expect to see. But have them not have the same tropes tied to it. Because what I see as a GM that's run a lot of settings and games is like you're... everything kind of comes from Tolkien. Tolkien did it. And then like Forgotten Realms and Galarian and everyone else, like there's a path that you can kind of loosely trace back to Tolkien. Like Tolkien to Forgotten Realms obviously is a bit of a jump, but like you can see where some ideas came from, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, there things have been refined and refined and refined, but it's the same kind of core ideas. And so I wanted to kind of rethink all those,
not that big of a jump if you really think about it.
I know. Some people, some nerds might argue though. But I wanted to like rethink all those tropes and do fantasy in a different setting. So I wrote, the way I like to do this kind of stuff is I'll have all these ideas of what I want to do floating in my head. And what makes me kind of organize them and start actually putting things together is like, it's going to sound dumb, it's writing. But like not writing down everything in like lists or whatever, like writing a short story. Or something that like has to tell you a story, right? Because once you do that, then you have all you have to put things together and figure out how to use them to make a story, right? And when you do that, they start to crystallize and you can get an idea of what you want. So I'm going to read a little short story I wrote. It's only like a couple paragraphs, and I'm going to tell you about the world. How's that sound?
I'm so excited.
Go for it.
You're today's host, so it's up to you.
All right. And again, this is just the way I'm doing it. If we do this again, it doesn't have to be done in this vein. In an age long forgotten, the ether, capital E, linked our world to the spheres and possibly laying them over and through one another. Gods and great beings wove uncounted worlds in the ether. They filled their creations with folk and taught them to trace the lines of the ether as they did. None mastered the art like, and this is going to be the first proper noun, there's not going to be too many, none mastered the art like the Gwyhyd. Their mastery of the ether made gods jealous and their domain traced lines through a thousand worlds. Their works made them proud and their pride made them blind. In their blindness, they lost sight of Artho, who guided their hands on the lines they first traced. Over millennia, they grew cruel in their expansion. When cries fell on deaf ears and omens were ignored by blind eyes, the lines of their mighty empire were cut. A jagged hole was ripped in the ether, and in an instant, the lines of a thousand worlds were cut away. Severed from the ether, untold millions perished in a moment, and every line in the ether traced through their worlds were severed, turning lives, houses, cities, nations, and history to ashes. Scattered across their severed worlds, the remaining Gwyhyd scratched their existence from what fertile land they found themselves on. Their glory faded into stories, into legend, into myth. And 10,000 years later, on a lonely world, for who the ether is all but forgotten, and Hedwyr, capital A, other proper noun, follow in the footsteps of their forgotten ancestors. Their ships trace lines in the sea, and their people settle a thousand islands. So, this is a bunch of fancy words, but basically the idea I had is, what if magic is like, this is going to sound stupid and it's going to sound really funny, what if magic is like internet, where it's just connections, right? Like in magic and Pathfinder and D&D is like the planes, right? And they lay over each other, right?
Yeah.
And so like working magic is knowing how to like pull things from the planes, right?
Yeah.
What if magic is more like, is like that, but instead of things being like mystically laid over each other, there's like kind of like ley lines where everything's connected. All these worlds are different, connected. So ether, ethernet, cables is a dumb joke.
Ha! Mm.
Isn't that great?
Would this be like a mixture of magic and technology?
It'd be more like, you know, it's the same concept of pulling things from different places, but you have to be connected to like a network, right? Like when you cast, it comes from all these other places, right? It's the same thing as like ley lines, but if like you got connection severed, you wouldn't be able to have a link to it. So the whole point of this, this is all going to make sense in a real quick. I wanted to do something that is colonial fantasy. You've known I love this genre, right?
Huh.
So my idea, my core idea that all this will make sense from is what if there's elves that have no connection to magic that are kind of a fill-in for colonial Britain or colonial France, European power, but they have no connection to magic on this world. And what actually happened...
You would make the elves the English and French, wouldn't you?
Yes. But what actually happened is they... This is why I use these two words, Gwehyde and Andrahyde, Andwyr or something. The second one, with the A, is the Welsh word for like colonist. So,
oh my God, babe.
There used to be a bunch of magical things and there's elves that like had their, you know, empire through different planes and multiple worlds, right? And they were really good at magic. And then they basically... got cruel and the gods like cut them out of the magic. They cut their network basically. And so that like when they did that, what? Jacob's looking at me funny.
It's a little bit like Warhammer.
It sounds a little bit like Warhammer. But basically like what happens is when the magic goes away, it's just like anything that was using magic just starts to fade. So like there's a ton of people who like have lived hundreds of years and they just like gone. Which could be like a significant
dusted
chunk of people.
Yeah.
And then like magical architecture or whatever else just gone.
Magical items just stop working.
So like 10,000 years later, like all that is just buried and gone. And it's like myths, creation myths, and people have no idea.
So would the like the start of this world's campaign or adventure or like year zero of like when Pathfinder first started, would the magic have come back somehow and you have to learn about it, or would this just be a magicless?
I think you could do it either way. You could play in like, so I was trying to represent it because it's colonial fantasy, right? Where you have the area where the world has developed and has these, you know, powers or whatever, and then across the sea, right? And I think that the humans are on another continent that has been colonized, which is kind of, you know, callback to what happened to the elves, even though they don't know it happened, right? But on the continent where humans are, they know how to use magic.
Where the humans are.
Yeah, they know how to use magic. It doesn't have to be, I want to avoid the like tribal people archetype trope because that's like dangerous water. They know how to use like arcane magic and they're reliant on it because they're, some part of their land is still connected to like the greater web of magic or whatever, but it's only so big. So they don't explore the rest of the world because they're reliant on magic over just raw technology so that they never make it too far away from their land. And the elves have no idea what magic even is. It's been so long that they've forgotten what it's even about. And so, like, you could play an entire adventure that's just, like, a magicless campaign with, like, elves. And there's I probably would figure out how to write in other fantasy races there as well. At least elves and dwarves. Or you could be, like, part of the elves discovering new land and humans and magic.
New.
Right, exactly.
Also... them. Gives a great potential for, within the world, unexpected surprises.
Yeah,
because if they don't remember what magic is, a city could have been built inside of a huge magic device that they just thought was a naturally occurring thing, and if someone were to introduce magic to it, could destroy the city or have it actually fulfill its function, which in the process moves it or something.
Right,
it'd be a cool way of subverting expectations within the society because they think something is used one way.
Yeah.
But then the moment that's power source is introduced, they're like, oh no, it does this.
Yeah.
So,
and the results could either be good or catastrophic.
The magic returns and it just launches an entire city into the stratosphere.
It's I'm thinking a lot along the lines of the webtoon with all the magic, the legendary baseball bat, and how a town is built in something's rib cage. And when the catastrophic event happens, the skeleton comes to life. And it just demolishes the town because it was built in its ribcage.
Oh, gosh. The one about the end days.
Yeah, the one with the hunters.
Yes. Oh, what was that?
I can't remember what it was called. It's on my webtoon. Yeah, it was very good.
I was going to ask, does that mean there's this entire civilization that is gone in essence? That like at some point you could find remnants of this ancient magical world there technologically advanced, or would it be just entirely disappeared off the face of the earth?
I think you could find evidence of it, but you wouldn't find anything magical necessarily, unless you want to have some caveats written in, right? So you could find evidence of it, but like 10,000 years later and in a colonial kind of era, you would just think, oh, this is just some archaeological thing we don't understand, right? Like the way we look at the Egyptians or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like there were pyramids that were made normal. If we were to pretend Egypt was like, the pyramids in Egypt were like part of this, which I guess some people conspiracy theorize happened anyway.
Yeah.
It'd be like the pyramid was built kind of normally, wasn't magical, but it held some magic sphere thing above it, right?
Yeah.
As a decoration thing. And so all you see is that. Like, so they wouldn't necessarily know. It's like, what happens if you take the fantasy trope, which is elves are really good at magic, and then you flip it on its head where they have no idea that magic is even real,
yeah,
in the first place. Because I like the colonial like fantasy aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it goes back before steampunk, and I feel like there's some fun you can have with it. It's another way where you're like, guns are automatically justified in the game.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the way I was approaching this homebrew is a lot of people, their process is to kind of like come up with an idea and make an atlas and kind of make a check mark through the different things.
Mm.
My goal was I want to avoid tropes and arrive at colonial fantasy. And so as a GM, I really have to know the backstory of the world to understand where it is in its current state. Hence, I wrote this to understand that, right? Because like if you know the backstory of the world, then you have something to pull from as you make the new stuff, more or less. So like, I guess if we want to work on shop some ideas, one of the things I hadn't really ironed out was like human culture a lot, or their like how magic works for them, and also like what the settlements look like between the humans and elves. So my basic idea was like, the only thing I had in my head is like there's some sort of like magic nexus point thing a couple spots in the human continent, and that's where like it's like a wireless antenna for magic to work. And so then humans may not even know it exists, but theoretically you could have a campaign maybe built around finding out that or something.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, I don't know if you have any other ideas for like campaign hooks, but another one I had was like some archaeologist who has some hint that their people's myths about magic are actually real and is trying to learn magic to make it work, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You guys, can you think of anything else? If you were wanting to play or be a GM for a game set in this world, what kind of story would you want to do with it?
I'd take the aspect of either magic has recently come back somehow. Like you say, the elves get dusted, right? For lack of a better word.
Not all of them, but anyone who's like vastly overlived their normal lifespan.
You could either have magic already have come back, or you could, if this is a Adventure Zone type campaign where they're
right.
the main characters of the entire universe, not just of your campaign, but of like a pretty big deal overall. You could start it off by exploring an ancient ruins. You're an archaeologist or an assistant to an archaeologist. And what you wouldn't know as players, but the DM would know, is that an elf bajillion years ago, a millennia ago, saw the signs happening. They knew that something was about to happen that was going to destroy everything. They built a device to try and save one of the connection points of the magic. And if that you could activate this connection point, it would be like a Wi-Fi tower. Mm-hmm. To the world around. It would keep the magic around. If we're trying to go off the internet, it would be the Wi-Fi point or towers better. And if this tower gets destroyed, then magic can't be used in that area. This could be something that comes back later on. But your people go there. You have no idea what's going on. Magic doesn't exist. You're just an archaeologist. But you accidentally activate the machine and it brings back a single point in this area, who knows how big it is, where magic can be used. And when that happens, all old magical devices, some of them would be tougher than others that could have lasted this long, suddenly activate. And your adventure could be learning about what this thing is and then how to use it. And of course, there'd be groups who would, they'd find one of the big weapons. You got to stop them because they figured out how to use it. And you don't know what even's going on half the time.
Right.
But you learn that this is, in fact, magic. You could even have some old fables that actually teach you how to do stuff. You research it and whatnot. But I think one fun way would be to give the take of magic has either just come back in general, or if like you're the main characters, you're there when magic is brought back. That way, because people like to use their magic classes.
Yeah.
And this would give you the ability to use magic. And then you could also kind of control the strength of it since, you know, it just came back. It's not at full power or whatnot. And then you could make a campaign of maybe the goal is to bring magic to the world. And they want to go and activate various towers now that they've learned how to do that or build them. Probably even more likely with the backstory I've given. But I would probably have it do that because there's also a bit of chaos that could be used there. You could have it as a stand-in for some kind of fae stuff because it wouldn't be fae, it'd be magic. But like it's something they don't understand. They would have technology. You could even have it in a modern-day setting like we have.
Right.
But they wouldn't understand what's going on because it's magic.
Yeah, I think I would never run this setting in a Pathfinder or D&D because there's too much assumptions about magic and stuff. But this, if I were to pick any system, I think I would do a lot of mods of Forbidden Lands.
Yeah.
Because magic being willpower based works really well. And it's not, you know, you can play a magic user character without having to use magic all the time. And it's just basically your willpower doesn't work for spells unless you're close to whatever the thing that powers magic is, right?
Yeah. You mentioned a lot of worlds.
Yeah.
You could even have part of it be they go to these other bubbles or other worlds, and that would let you have just new maps. It would be so like Forbidden Lands gets called up. If you were to try to play it more than one time, there's one map of the Forbidden, one map of
Ravenland.
So you could play that campaign once, but if you do a full campaign, you'll know the Ravenlands. Mm-hmm. But this would give you, you would basically have to develop a system on rolling randomly about what's going to be in the space you're going. There would be no, maybe one or two big predetermined cities or whatnot, but you could have different worlds and you could see how these different worlds evolved in different ways without magic. You could, in fact, have tribal stuff in one of them. You could have the Wild West in one of them, just without the desert, or even with the desert. Mm. It could be Wild West in the jungle or something like that. It would be a fun way. It would be like Galarian, where you have different places. You could be like, I guess I'll make this one Gothic horror. We could do that. Or this one will be barbarian space punk or stuff like that. And it could just be how, you know, you could make a game out of traveling the worlds. Unfortunately, it would sound a lot like the Nightingale game that just came out.
I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
Small things.
I would want to know if the gods would be okay with these little remnants of magic being left there, or if they would be coming to this world eventually. Maybe this is the last in the line trying to wipe it out. Maybe that could be like the core of the thing. If I was going to run in a game and it would be like an end time sort of scenario.
Yeah. I think my idea around gods, and as obviously in this world, there may be some gods that people worship, but like there's no connect. Magic and the gods are kind of connected. You know, same thing with like divine and arcane, right? But there's no real connection to them outside of the places where magic works. And the kind of bigger idea I had is if you think about like being a network. Basically, the part of the network that the elves like conquered got cut out. So like magic doesn't work there, but there's a bigger world outside of it that does still have magic and where the gods are bigger and present, right? And then there's like loose, tiny little threads that connect to some of the worlds that got cut out. One plot could be like, exploring the great beyond, like you could find the other planes that people take for granted in like a D&D or a Pathfinder, right? You go explore them and find out they exist.
Maybe in places where things didn't completely disconnect, but just sort of withdrew enough power that maybe people weren't having their lives supernaturally extended, but they became undead or something.
Yeah, or imagine going from like opening a portal on the like human part of the world where magic does still work and experiencing a full magic civilization. Like, it'd be like
stepping into the past.
Or the future.
It'd be like taking, you know, a person from the 1700s and teleporting them to Galarian.
Yeah.
It'd be wild.
I would show them a single Nyan Cat gif and they would explode.
Counterpoint. You said you have like a cutoff in all of the magic and the like, but what if there's still locations where there's still like small hubs of it, but in your non-fully explored world, you might not know they exist.
Yeah.
So you find that that's where your more organized and successful civilizations tend to pop up. And perhaps even some who may not even realize they're using magic. Like somehow things tend to work out a little better and they don't necessarily know why. And you get some expert in there and like, oh, this is actually magic. And
it's less about them using the magic and more about the magic affecting the world around them.
Affecting the world around them and benefiting them and like helping things progress that might not have progressed.
Crops grow better. Maybe someone closer to
maybe
the
maybe people have better health.
Yeah.
Things like that. Like the better civilizations end up in these areas where there's still pockets of strength of magical influence.
Yeah.
I like that. That could also be a way to have like the human part of the world be magical, but maybe not be like high magic. Like maybe in addition to like a range of how far magic works,
I've got arcane power and I'm going to get really good at farming.
There's also like a bandwidth, if we're thinking in network terms, right? Like the bandwidth on the human connection is really low.
Uh-huh.
So like they can do some spells and stuff, but like they can't archmage anything without sucking up all the bandwidth. So like if you were to open a portal in somewhere like this, everything else magical would kind of like...
Yeah.
For a little bit while you were doing the portal.
Oh, you mean magic dial-up?
Yeah, exactly. Magic dial-up. Let's go.
Because like, wait a minute. I need to get started.
This is what we used back in the day. You also weren't able to use your telephone if you wanted to get on the internet.
Hold up. You can't attack me yet. I'm still warming up this spell. Yeah. The whole loading sequence hasn't happened yet.
It's okay. Your other person is loading too.
Guys, hold on. I'm stuck at 99%. It's almost ready.
The thing I was thinking about with the humans is I didn't want to make them like too tribal coded. So I was like, well, they have to have a reason. I want magic to be over here, but they have to have a reason to not have been the ones exploring instead of the elves, instead of just like elven technology superior or something dumb like that. Right. And like, that's where I got the idea of, oh, maybe magic only works so far and they use magic regularly. And so if they try to go too far out at sea, it suddenly stops working. Yeah. So it's like, oh, well, we can't go out there.
That's where your nexus of good society would be, because that's where it works better. And they may or may not have made that connection, other than if we get too far from such and such.
Yeah.
We can't.
They'll think of it, it's like everything out there is just cursed and evil, you know?
The other question would be, in some worlds, there's multiple ways to tap into magic. Like some have innate abilities and some get divine magic. In this world, would there be other ways to tap into the magic than just connections to these essential Ethernet cables? Or would someone be able to, pervert the system and come up with like a darker or less formal form of magic and use it for their own gain?
I hadn't thought about that. I think I was thinking of magic, period. The way magic works is just pulling things together from other beings and worlds. So like if you think of like a world having like this invisible ley line connection to all these other worlds, right? And then the divine side of that is it's just connected to these god figures in the ether, right? Magic is basically just the pipe which things move between. So how you use it, just it's not necessarily a property of the magic, like ether, whatever connection. It's just how you use it. I hadn't thought about using it like in a corrupting manner, though, like stuff like undeath or shadow magic or whatever you want to call it, right? I hadn't thought about that.
Or even just like like in some of your high magic world, you'll have like, oh, there's arcane magic. Yeah. I studied to get this. I worked for this. And then there's like the sorcerer class where it's like, yeah, no, I got a dragon in my lineage. Somebody messed around and that's how come I've got magic. And then you've got the cleric who's like, my God gives me my magic. Would that be the only path to magic? Would be able to manipulate those threads of ether?
I think if you're thinking about it like a connection thing, so when you connect to the internet, you know, you can go to any different website. You go to your IP address, right? And so if you're a divine user, you basically talk through the ether to a god. If you're an arcane user, you've learned how to talk or pull things through the ether from other places. If you're an innate one, it's just like you do the same thing that wizard does, but it kind of comes to you naturally. You don't have to study it. Maybe magic has affected you like physically or like your mind or whatever.
If you use the corrupted magic, you're going to the dark web.
The dark web. But that's like the idea I had. It's like, what if magic is like
a network? Is this the Shadow Wizard Money Gang?
Shadow Wizard Money Gang.
We love casting spells.
Corrupted spells.
Corrupted spells. But yeah, that's kind of the idea I have of it. Are there any like questions or ideas you want to... lingering ones you had? That's my general gist. Obviously, this is a fledgling.
Would your dwarf still live in the ground?
Yes. I won't shake that trope.
Trying to avoid tropes.
Next question. Does your world have unexplored, uninhabited areas that the adventurers could find?
I think so. I think the main things I thought of this is, you know, modeling
it. Truly uninhabited?
Maybe not truly uninhabited. Probably a mix. There's probably like islands or, you know, subcontinents that are uninhabited. But there's
also... I don't know how I feel about being the English.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, if you found like an island, or what if you found an area that wasn't inhabited by like any sentient species, just like animals you had never seen before or something. So there's nobody to subjugate into your colonialism.
Well, that's
just
what I was thinking.
Could
about
you explore
with like the humans instead of like it being, you can explore the colonial subjugation part of it if you want. That leaves open the door for the elves to be like a villain. You could play human characters, right? The other way to think about it is instead of them being technologically inferior to the elves, they're just different. They're connected to magic. The elves aren't. So, like, it's a clash of cultures and interests, right, in a way of doing things. But there could be also just uninhabited things where, like, oh, this was a big colony for the elves on a huge continent, and then, you know, magic's gone, and what was a viable place to live is now really hard to navigate.
What happened to the unicorns?
I haven't thought about fauna at all. Maybe
are they just horses now?
Maybe they're just horses now.
Maybe they never existed in the
Maybe first that's what
place.
Happened here.
Maybe. Yeah. That's a good question.
What happened to the dragons?
Oh, would
do
would,
we imagine them?
Would the connection to magic only be for your sentient humanoid races, or could certain animal species have had connections to the magic?
I think it'd be like if you were in a place that still had a connection to magic, that's where you'd find like magical beasts in terms of like game mechanics.
Find an ancient dragon, goes to cast spell, dragon pushes glasses up nose. Actually, that's not how you do that.
I don't think there'd be any dragons in this world unless they came from other worlds.
What if they were deep, deep underground?
What about dungeons?
What if that's what the dwarves are looking for?
This is one of those things where like, what you're talking about is getting back to like traditional fantasy tropes.
Yeah, because they're great.
And they're great. But I wanted to challenge myself to think of like a different kind of world. And so like, I think if I were to actually do this, I'd have to get real creative with the monsters in it and like pull things to make it feel different instead of just making it another Galarian or with a twist, or another Faerun with a twist, right? I want it to be its own thing that has some connection callback to the originals, but is its own thing. Mm. And speaking of dwarves, I know that is the one trope that I will stand.
Okay, yeah.
And it's only because I got a 4E book about Dark Sun, and they have hair, like beardless dwarves in it, and they scare me. I don't like them.
Paizo, how could you?
No, that it was Botsy.
Dwarves?
Wasn't it still Paizo that drew it, though?
No.
Dwarfs instead mine clouds.
No, Wayne Reynolds may have drawn some of it, but not all of it. He is Paizo? No,
yes.
He's done work for a lot of things. Yeah,
Wayne Reynolds and Jason Bowman are both Paizo.
Listen,
that's just them.
That's right.
Okay, Wayne if Brady I'm talking about Derulo. Paizo, I'm talking about one specific person. It's up to you to ascertain which sect I mean.
Jacob does bring a good up idea, though. One fun way to subvert it would have dwarves be like the steampunky,
oh yeah,
BioShock Infinite type of people.
They're under the sea.
The city in the sky is always great.
Maybe that's
dwarf
their,
maids.
They still connect to magic, and that's what powers it.
Yes, dwarf maids.
But just that's, big fish, dwarf mermaids.
I like that. That's all. You could just make a world where you subvert things like that. Just turn everything reverse. Dwarfs aren't in the ground, they're in the sky.
I don't know if I want to do everything reverse, but
no.
Fun.
Yeah.
What would be fun would be to figure out how technology would work. Because what if you have your elves who don't have the magic? They're the ones who start developing more technological advances because they have no magic to do anything with.
Yeah.
And so your races, your humans who are in those areas where they're connected to magic do not have the technology because they can use magic to get their means.
I actually thought about this a lot because I was like, if we're going to do colonial things, we have to talk about like sailing. And that made me ask the question, what was it? What set of inventions was it that allowed people like in our world to mm-hmm. sail more than just the, you know, shorter
salt
distances? What is it that let them sail like across the Atlantic, right? What inventions? And it was basically ship building developments, right? And so I was like, okay, if you don't have connection to magic, this is something that's important to you because the water is basically a highway to sell things, right? So this becomes important to you. But if you're the humans, like you got magic. You make your boats, but they don't need to go that far. If you go too far out, your magic stops working. So like that's how the elves built the boats to travel to the people. Boom.
You know, this sounds a lot like you could also take it down the route of a like mid-ages or colonial times Mass Effect. Because you have technology on one side, you have magic on the other, which means inevitably someone's going to come along and mesh the magic and the technology.
Yeah.
Much like, you know, in Mass Effect, you've got the Omnitool infiltrators. You have the people who are psychics, whatever they're actually called in that one. And I believe there's a class that meshes the two.
Huh.
Because there's physical, tech, and magic.
Biotics.
And there's six classes. It's the one that focuses on each one, and then three classes that combine two of the different ones, right? If I recall correctly. So you could also, like, depending on when you have your game take place, you could also have a class, for lack of a better word, that mixes tech and magic.
Yeah. This would be something that's like, if I were to ever run this, it would have to be like a custom game kind of deal or something really rules light that you could get away with, like Powered by the Apocalypse or Fate stuff.
Like a pool of D6s and loose and you only roll if it's life or death or something like that.
It would have to be a lot more less mechanically intense because it would be way too hard to mod a Pathfinder into this.
I think Forbidden Lands would still be your best bet. Because magic is so vague in that one, even though it tells you what it does, it's still relatively vague. And you could do the same thing with various tech stuff.
Yeah. I was super into the idea of colonial fantasy. And so I wrote a backstory on how to get there. Basically, it's like these were like the first people who really got how to do magic stuff in their whatever, you know, multiverse. Because like a god helped them learn it. And they basically, instead of using it for his original intention, they kind of empired their way too hard. And so what I liked about, okay, you know, they said, all right, you guys have had enough pulling your connection, is that unknowingly, they're kind of repeating the same tropes that their ancestors did, but without magic now. Mm. That's kind of a theme. So like if you were trying to be the main characters of a story, one of the things could be like, yo, we found out that the past is repeating itself and we got to work on ourselves as like a people.
Or you can say the past is repeating itself.
We have to kill every elf.
There's not a god to yank it away from us this time. So let's just keep going.
Yeah.
He can't yank our power source this time. We made it ourselves.
Or you could journey to another world where like people figured it out and like weren't imperialistic and aggressive. You know,
that's putting a lot of trust in people.
I just like the imagination, keeping the internet metaphor, imagining someone with their own little magic Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah.
Now, let me turn on my magic Wi-Fi hotspot in the middle of this magic desert.
Be human, see elves coming up. Not human.
That would also be really funny if there's like a world
take.
If there's another world where there's other humans and like they remember the elves.
Oh.
And they still have, they don't have magic anymore,
they would still hold the grudge.
Whenever the magic was yanked, they jumped the elves and they remember.
Yeah, they would hold a grudge.
Yeah, not human.
You said that in areas where magic was still kind of connected, gods might be a little bit more present.
Yeah.
I imagine that the gods might have touted to those humans that elves were some sort of evil force.
It could be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, depending on who they worship, right?
Mm-hmm. I would love to see, and I'm stealing from a trope that I know exists, but if you have a group of people living in an area where an advanced society once was but isn't anymore, they come up with their own mythos and fable and religion to explain the things that they can't understand.
Yes.
So imagine how crazy their stuff would be because there's all this technology they don't understand. Well, this is just our God. Like that this thing came because they have ultimate power. And it's like, actually, they just had magic. It kind of makes me think.
Yeah, because you can craft a whole set of legends and myths and like their version of the Greek gods, right?
From the elves probably believe that every single god they had is dead. This machine that used to feed us, that used to keep us safe from falling stars, if that's a particularly like impact-ridden zone,
mm-hmm.
died defending us. Or and they, now this land is barren.
Or they could do the classic, the sun is a god, you know, and it's the only one that still looks after us, right?
Mm-hmm. Would your gods be more like forces of nature or actual thinking beings overall? Like there could be different variousness between them, but like overall.
I think there's a sliding scale, right? On like one hand, you have Pathfinder, which is very being personal. And mm-hmm. on the other hand, you have like pure force of nature, Mother Nature type gods. I think it would be in the middle, but it's more definitely more along the lines of there is a personality, there is a like a name, but they're closer to a force of nature.
Was every god unanimous in yanking out the plug?
No. That would be too boring.
That's too, yeah, I gotta agree. I think
okay.
I think no, because it's more interesting, and then that can also kind of explain why some of the places have some connection to magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think there was consensus. It's kind of like with sealing away Rovagug. Maybe not everyone wanted to do it the same way, but it's like, yeah, these guys are like, everyone has their little domains and it's like, all right, these guys are stepping on our turf, you know?
Your different gods could straight up directly reference different, for lack of a better word, elements or types of magic. That yeah. could be something that you look at when you choose your class. Like it could be a god for, let's say we'll go with elements, a fire god, earth god, wind god, and that is the power that comes through.
One thing you could do is if you have like a sphere that's like connected to everything, right, being a plane, like a plane of fire, the whole collective part of it could also be the god of fire, right? Mm-hmm. So if you go there, it's a place and a entity thing.
And if something happened and that god died.
All right, Aridin.
That magic could be lost forever.
Yeah, exactly.
But like the way I look at it is you wouldn't have a god of like, look at Pathfinder. There mm-hmm. wouldn't be a god of forging, a god of the hunt, a god of family, a god of
it'd be bigger concepts.
Magic. It would be the god and it's related to fire. The god, it's related to fate. A god, it's related to concepts rather than, oh, those are concepts, but there'd be more.
It's not a domain. It's like their core existence, yeah, yeah. Right? It's not just, this isn't personality that is divine and he's about these set of domains. It would be like, this is a personified version of fire.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
They would represent that, yeah.
A bit more nebulous and a lot less compartmentalized. Like, say you've got like your Greek mythology where each god has like a teeny tiny little domain sometimes, it seems.
Right.
Less like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would directly relate to how popular or unpopular and maybe even considered nefarious some gods are, because like the god of fire would be loved. Fire destroys, but fire also warms your home. The god of earth would be loved because you need that material to make stuff.
And for agriculture.
Whereas a god of the cold probably would not be enjoyed very much.
No.
Or even a god of the wind, maybe.
It depends on how tornado ridden that area is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that now,
would there be god of wind or god of storm?
I would say air, really. And then you could preface
that. Is there electricity?
There probably is.
But I like this idea of kind of rethinking Planescape with this network thing because and magic with it, because instead of trying to kitchen sink one planet, you basically can get your kitchen sink of settings for free in a kind of built-in multiverse, right? Or a built-in, you know, way to get to different worlds. Forgotten Realms has a concept of this with the different spheres, but this feels like it's more integrated, where that is, feels like it's a little bit more tacked on later on. This is like, yeah, there's, of course there's different like worlds or whatever. That's how magic works fundamentally. So if you really, you could have different campaigns in the same theoretical overall setting and still be able to link them if you wanted to, instead of having it all be on the same planet. There's trade-offs obviously to each different one, but it's a way to have your cake and eat it too with a kitchen sink, I think.
I like cake.
Yeah.
Well, favorite dessert.
Unless anyone else has anything else to add to this, I think about wraps up our first homebrew hot seat.
So this was an example of homebrewing a world.
This is a whole world. So this is a big ask.
Because we're not all going to do this.
No.
This is where I'm thinking I'd just homebrew an adventure.
Yeah.
So this is an example of starting a whole world.
This is a whole world. So like, it's not focused enough to do like a person, a city, not even really a culture. We've kind of like hinted at what those would be. This is like the big broad picture setting that you would paint those things in.
Yeah.
This homebrew hot seat idea, I think we can do it with adventures, even just specific dungeons.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to make a map of the whole thing, but like, oh, this dungeon was built by this.
You need to.
That's a lot of work. But like, here's the different rooms in it, but we don't have to actually draw the whole thing necessarily. Or you could do like a town, a culture of people set in maybe another setting. Like the idea is to be creative, bring an idea, and we can like workshop it together. Yeah. But unless anyone else has anything to add, I think we're going to call it there for our first homebrew hot seat.
Why'd you have to make the humans the interesting ones?
I love it. Don't listen to them.
I was trying to
flip
tropes.
Tired of being crapped on for being human.
In this setting, the elves would be the new humans, so you'd like the elves here.
That's fair.
Because they're the ones that
wouldn't
have
the
magic.
Elves are just guys.
They're just guys.
I like the non-magical people who still manage. I'll build a whole concept on that. You watch out.
I like flipping the tropes a little bit. But yeah, that's going to wrap up our homebrew hot seat for today. I'm hoping that we can make this a bit of a regular series. We'll see how creative we're feeling. It's a nice thing to do with bonus banter other than just doing like, what do we eat today? What do we do this week? And questions, you know, we can share some creativity stuff.
Hey, Jimmy Jones.
I have got some of my world ready already.
Woo! I'm so excited to do one for your world. I've seen hints of it and I'm very excited. But that's going to wrap it up for now. Thank you all for listening and we'll catch you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Bonus Banter. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing, rating, and reviewing us. If you would like to submit a question or comment for Bonus Banter, please use the Google form linked in the episode description. If you want to see more from us, check out our website, thirdgallon.com, or follow us on Twitter. We're @thirdgallon, that's THIRD gallon. We are also on Threads, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook with the same handle, @thirdgallon. We also publish a video version of this podcast on YouTube, which you can find on our channel, The Third Gallon Podcast. If you'd like to support the show, check out our Ko-fi page. You can find us at ko-fi.com/thirdgallon. That's ko-fi.com/thirdgallon. The theme music for Bonus Banter was composed by Alexander Nakarada. You can find more of his work at serpentsoundstudios.com and support him at patreon.com/anakarada. That's patreon.com/anakarada. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.